South Africans are spending about 9 hours online every day.
The likes that don't really turn into leads, the leads don't turn into sales, then you're measuring the wrong things. If you're measuring the wrong things, your attention's not going to be focused on what's actually moving the needle.
Salespeople are in a position where they don't want to become a marketer. They're salespeople, right? But they're being drawn into a world where content is king.
You're at the right place. My guest today sits right at the crossroads of sales, psychology, and digital transformation. But what makes him interesting isn't just what he does, it's how he thinks. This is not one of those LinkedIn content guys. This is Brad Ether from Down Under in Australia. He's a communication strategist who helps people translate real-world credibility into digital influence. Today, we're going to talk about his sales philosophies, his frameworks, and his personal journey through the pandemic to his own right place. Welcome, Brad. Wonderful to talk to you today.
Thanks for having me, John. Looking forward to it.
Awesome, Brad. Brad, let's dive right in. You told me that you help people bridge the gap between traditional relationship selling and the digital world. What do most professionals still get wrong about that bridge?
I think you need to go back to understand the cultural moment that we're in. And what's happened over the last 20 years, we're really seeing, especially it's been progressed through COVID, is now we are really well and truly online. I had a quick look at some of the South African statistics before I jumped on the podcast. South Africans are spending about 9 hours online every day. In Australia, that's 6. So you guys are beating us there. But that's the reality. That's the reality of the current situation that we're in. And if we can't learn how to communicate online, and when I say communicate, I mean communicate on a personal level, the bridge starts falling apart. It's very easy to miscommunicate things when we're writing. It's very easy to miscommunicate things when we're, you know, behind a video and can't read the body language and things like that. But the reality is that that's where the majority of us are spending our time at the moment. So, yeah, that's where people are falling down. We're missing the digital skill sets to be able to converse in a modern climate.
Yeah, 100%, Brad. I agree with you there. And I mean, you've also said that digital isn't a marketing tool; it's a relationship channel. So if we are trying to upgrade our skills in terms of how we build relationships in the new digital world, what are some of the things that we should be looking at?
So when I say that, there's a concept called the Gutenberg parentheses, and essentially it's a marketing term that's come around. Think about it all the way back in the Stone Age. We were speaking to each other and sharing information orally, sharing stories. All of a sudden, the printing press comes along, and now we're writing information, and it's boxed up into a set of predefined conditions, and then it's distributed for us to consume. The internet's now brought in another layer where it's free-flowing. It can change, and even more so now with AI. But what marketing has been built on is that middle of the parentheses where they're creating something that they can distribute for consumption. And that's still happening today. But what we're really finding is that there's the marketing that speaks directly within a given form. And then underneath that is all the relational stuff that happens that doesn't necessarily happen with a message from a video, but it's actually conversing in places like comments, in DMs. I mean, every single person will be in a WhatsApp channel where they're sharing videos or sharing little things that's only within that context. You know, if you're on Instagram, quite often you will have conversations with people without even writing. It'll just be one video back to another video. And that is how we are, that's the reality of how we're conversing today.
What I'm thinking about here is that it's not just what you say in your message, is also how you present your message. Can you just talk about how we should actually be presenting our messages in today's digital world? Because we can obviously miss the mark when it comes to that. Like, we think our message, the content is good, but how we present it can be way off.
Yeah. So the idea is very simple. It's you can create content and put it on the feed, but what are you actually trying to do? Humans don't really listen. We're very distracted. And if you're creating content and putting it into a feed, they might read it, but they're going to move straight on to the next thing. So how you package it matters more than what you actually say. And what I mean by that is if you're speaking about a particular problem that you're solving, you need to package it in a way. So say it could just be something like a simple, like if you look at some of my content, I just have an orange border. But that particular content is speaking to a particular point that I want to get across, so that when someone continues reads that same message multiple times, they've got a visual reference that they can then associate with the emotions of what I'm trying to get across. And that's in a nutshell what it means by packaging your message slightly different. For you, I know you do a lot of podcasts, and podcasting is a medium in itself. When it comes up and there's two people on the screen, you know you're about to sit down to a conversation. You know, that's what the intent behind that, those two faces on a screen, says to someone before they even unclick that mute button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it makes total sense to me that the way you present it must be in line with the content, but also in line with the goal of the actual piece of content. And they must almost complement each other, that you're going to trigger the right reaction from your target audience or your client or what you're actually trying to broadcast. And I mean, now you've built Tomorrow Communications around turning content comments and conversations into sales tools. And I know you've really focused on the relational side of things, but how do you coach your clients or inform them in a way that it doesn't become transactional for them, but it's still based on actually building relationships with people?
The people that I deal with are largely service-based businesses who haven't adapted to the new modern world of even putting content online. What they're finding is that it's becoming more and more difficult without having that content element online to win new business. They're relying on old businesses and referrals, and new businesses very hard to come by. And it's essentially salespeople are finding it harder and harder because they don't have the collateral to put in front of people. Salespeople are in a position where they don't want to become a marketer. They're salespeople, right? But they're being drawn into a world where content is king. So in upskilling a salesperson and defining their role and setting parameters around what content should look like for a salesperson and aligning that with a message that the company can take to market, that's where the key is, because the definition, as I have defined it for the salesperson, is the content. The role of a salesperson content is to create conversations. So that's what salesperson is creating content for. It doesn't need to be flashy. It doesn't need to be marketing. It doesn't need to be a million different switches. It needs to be something that sparks curiosity, or something that I refer to as pebbles. When we were talking before about a piece of content that you just share with a friend, creating a piece of content that's a pebble, that we can share to someone else in the network. So whether or not the content is even designed to be get reach, it doesn't matter, because the salesperson needs to put themselves out there. They need to understand the structure, but the end goal is to kill two birds with one stone. Have it out there and send it to the people that they know need to see it. And it's a way to keep in touch, and that's what relationships are all about. Keeping in touch.
No, 100%, Brad. I agree with you there. I mean, the content is focused on the conversation. It's not marketing. So what would you say separates content that builds trust and activates these conversations from content that just adds to the noise that is so prevalent today?
There's two ways to look at this, right? From a salesperson's perspective, trust is something that is not built in a feed. It is built through the relationship. And you take the initial conversation through a sales cycle, you deliver, and that's where trust is built. If you're the salesperson that has already established that trust, then you have people that jump onto your content, like, contribute to it. And because other people are engaging with it on a deeper level than just great post, you know, full stop, there's a level of credibility that is given when somebody else looks at someone that they know contributing to your content, and that's where trust is built, through mutual connection. It's exactly the same as introducing someone else in a room.
I think what I like about that is that there's a time element there as well. It's not an instant gratification. You're not chasing a viral TikTok video that's hot today and cold tomorrow. You're almost in it for the long term. Is this something that you almost have to coach your clients through, to almost trust the process and not just look for instant gratification or 1,000 likes on day one?
If you're working with me, we're not chasing the likes. We're not chasing instant gratification. My perspective on social media is it's a blessing and a curse. And from a business perspective, if you are going to get your salespeople into, which I think you should, you do need to be constantly aware of the curse that's involved as well. You don't want your salespeople scrolling the feed all day, every day. You want them to be out there doing the actual work. It needs to be a component of what they do, but not the be all and end all. It's just a small addition to what they're already doing. Once you understand the purpose behind what you're doing it and have a structure around what you're doing, it all becomes a lot easier when the goal from the get-go has never been to broadcast reach. It's to build organically, which I think is maybe the delineation between what I was referring to as marketing content and sales content. You know, salespeople would be used to the idea of account management, and that is the purpose of that's much more akin to the purpose of a sales person on LinkedIn, rather than building a following or whatnot. We're looking for organic moments to broach into a conversation, rather than having a million followers and a million impressions on LinkedIn.
No, exactly, Brad. And when you're building this up with your client, I mean, they obviously have to trust you, and you want to build this digital trust. What are some of the signals during this time that you're looking at, some of the metrics that you're measuring to ensure that the strategy is actually working?
Measuring anything on online is incredibly difficult. It just is. And if you're going to measure metrics, then it's a losing game. What you should be measuring any salesperson on is the amount of conversations that they're having. And through a methodology like this, rather than cold calling, for example, cold calling's a numbers game, definitely. This is a signals game. And if, like, I'll be honest with you, I've just had a kid at the moment, 6 weeks ago, and currently the expectations that I'm setting on myself are sending 5 people that I've recognized signals from to have a conversation with every week. And I'm having 4 conversations a week, you know, like it's a 75%, you know, meeting request to meeting booked rate. But the idea, the same thing with a cold call, you never know when someone else is in market or what they've going on. It's just a conversation, and meetings booked doesn't mean I'm converting anything. Do you know what I mean? All it means is that I'm recognizing a signal, having a conversation, finding out where they're at, what their thinking is, so that I have enough information to potentially return to the conversation at a later date, onboard them as a client, or move on, because they're never going to be relevant. And that's the nature of business development that a lot of businesses that I was describing before are missing. Yeah, yeah. So measure your salespeople like you always would on conversations.
I really like that answer because, I mean, I think it's the conversations that lead to opportunities, that lead to relationships. Nothing happens without a conversation. If you're chasing something else, like you said, the likes that don't really turn into leads, the leads don't turn into sales, then you're measuring the wrong things. If you're measuring the wrong things, your attention is not going to be focused on what's actually moving the needle, like you said earlier. And I mean, in these conversations that you're having, are you still finding that there are companies or professionals out there with almost zero online footprint? If you had to start working with somebody like that to take them to a complete digital ecosystem, what are some of those early building blocks that you would focus on?
Yes, there are still more businesses out there than not that don't have a digital footprint, especially when you're looking at legacy companies that have been around, you know, their trade and profession has been around since time immemorial. What I find is that salespeople are generally coming to me and we're having discussions. Something that I hear all the time in these discussions is, oh, I'm really interested in doing it, but my company would never allow it. That's the biggest objection I get. But what I say to them is that the reason that we're having this conversation right now is because you've shown a level of leadership right here that you're frustrated with the tools that your business is giving you to be able to do your job. And that's essentially where I fit in, right? It takes a hand raiser to be able to deploy something like this. And none of these businesses generally have a marketing department because the solutions that they provide are so bespoke, complex, that marketing's never worked in the past. Because marketing in that one way sense hasn't worked. It's not one problem. It's not one solution. It's a million problems and a variety of solutions. So how do you address that? You skill up the sales team to be able to feel confident to communicate online, and you come up with a communication strategy to begin developing all the assets that are required to build a content ecosystem around what you do, depending on the market verticals, depending on who you're speaking to. And it takes time. You know, like realistically, it's a process. The initial process is probably about 3 months, which essentially goes through, it's like a boot camp, which we do a workshop called the Message Mapping Workshop, where we ideate and get all the IP that we currently need into a document. We interview the necessary people to be able to put that IP into some sort of something that's understandable for me, someone who's not in the industry, so that I can understand exactly what they're doing. And then we start building the resources that are going to be most beneficial to the salespeople in that moment, whether or not they're focusing on a market vertical. So you start small and you build it out chunk by chunk. For example, at the moment, you know, an educational resource is something that everybody wants. Every business wants some sort of educational resource that they can deliver to onboard or to work with partners or anything like that. And that is something that is quite easily to work through once you've defined the question, what the problem is, what we're working towards, and then, yeah, developing the communication piece to reach that outcome. So, yeah, there's no reason the salesperson can't start communicating to the market immediately while you're building resources in the background as and when they need them. As long as we all know the direction that we're going, it can happen quite organically. You just need the support behind you to be able to, you need someone to be able to come in and lead it. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%, Brad. And when you are going through this process, are you talking to multiple teams at the same time? Perhaps the marketing team, the sales team. Are you talking to the business owners as well? Are you getting, how deep in the trenches are you getting with them?
Getting very deep in the trenches, like very deep. I become someone who is I'm so entrenched in the business that, you know, people bounce ideas off me constantly. That's the idea. And it has to be like that, because in order to change from one state to another, you need open communication. You need, until you reach that point where we're no longer uncertain, you need that certainty from someone to say, this is the direction that we're going in. So yeah, for that reason, I don't take on too many clients, because it is an emotional toll on my end as well. But yeah, yes, I get involved with all the teams depending on what they need. Usually there's one source, someone who I am in contact with. And then when I need the other teams, I might do like a one session strategy, one session a week, where I bring in other teams to get one piece of this puzzle done. And then we bounce back. But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm out there working with massive organizations. So generally speaking, I am dealing with the founder or the owner, and they've got anywhere between 5 to 25 employees, small businesses. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's a great size company to be working with. And Brad, during these conversations, and especially now in 2025, obviously AI is reshaping how we communicate, how we consume content, how we even create content. How are you using AI? And how are you also preventing people going full blast into AI and almost losing the human element to the digital communication?
My business wouldn't work without AI. I have built the business. I started the business at a time when I had the opportunity to build from the ground up using AI. My personal philosophy is that it always needs the human touch. So when I am training and creating AI systems for people to use, my explicit instructions or what I create for them is an AI agent that requires human input to get the best results out. And that's how I train the use of AI, is that it's not throwing in an idea and getting an output and posting. You need considered thought. If you want to sound intelligent and separate yourself from the crowd, you don't need more AI slop. You need to not only be able to write it, you need to be able to present it in client meetings as well. So if you haven't taken the time to put your own thoughts into the process and actually refine your own thinking, it's never going to be beneficial. But yeah, how am I using it? For an example, another workshop that I have is called the Unified Message, and what essentially that is a workshop where we all get together and agree upon certain values of the company. And it acts as a filter. So when a salesperson writes a piece of content on their own back foot, on their own foot, so that they have their own voice, their own message, you put it through the filter so that we make sure that it's aligned with the brand as a company itself. And it doesn't change it much. It's still, but it might change a few words. Do you know what I mean? It might change a few aspects of what's being said so that we have a unified front going to market. We don't sound all like, we sound like a group of individuals unified rather than anything else. So that's an example of how I'm using it. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that example. I mean, you can quickly lose the heart and soul of the message if you go too far in the AI, a very generic language. But if you can use it to unify, to even clarify your message, I think it can definitely pay dividends, or at least benchmark some of the stuff that you want to actually communicate out there.
AI is an amazingly powerful tool. But my message would be that you're not always sold the reality. You know, there's an example of once upon a time. I'm going to go off on a little tangent, but the British wanted people to go and get flora and fauna from other places in the world and bring them over so that they could exhibit them. They couldn't do that because every time they put it onto a boat, the salt, it killed them by the time they got there. So a guy made a little tree house, like an aviary, you know, the glass bottle that you put over the seed and it plants, and he solved the problem. He could get a seed and take it on a vessel and bring it over to Europe so that they could exhibit it. The problem being is that was the original intention. That was what they were sold. But the result was that now we've opened up trade where we're stealing vanilla beans from Brazil and taking cocoa leaves from other places and completely disrupting economies because of one simple invention. We're sold one thing and delivered something else. And I think that that's the message of AI. It's not necessarily going to make things more efficient. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to make things better. So just be mindful of how you're using it, because you're ultimately right now in a position to make that choice, whether it is a hindrance or something that's actually beneficial.
I like that message, Brad. No, thanks for sharing that. Very, very thought-provoking, actually. I mean, we live in a world where we think we've got everything figured out, but we haven't figured out all the unintended consequences as well, all the multiple ripple effects. Now, Brad, at the Right Place podcast, we believe your right place is at the intersection of your roles, relationships, and environment. So I just want to focus on that a little bit now. Everyone's been through the pandemic a couple of years back, but it was quite a life quake moment for yourself. You were forced to adapt. You returned to your academic roots. You built a new kind of sales strategy, grounded in how people behave online. It's been a couple of years since that happened, Brad. What stands out for you from that time?
I never really had a real job until I was 23. I worked for myself. I used to teach guitar. I did lawn mowing. I started an events business that unfortunately didn't work out for one reason or another, and I fell into sales through my audio engineering background. At that time, I picked up a digital communications and culture degree at a master's level. And what that really focused on was the anthropological perspectives of how humans have adapted to new technologies as they've come in. So not from a media lens, but not from a marketing lens. It's more to do with the psychology of human behavior and how we've adapted. And that's the lens that I bring in today. Fast forward, after 10 years of sales, I was living overseas. COVID happened. That forced me to come back to Australia, where I got a job as the national sales manager, the only salesperson in a new business, a multinational that had just started in Australia. And the borders were shut. I had had a few years out of the relationship aspect in Australia, and so I needed to adapt. And so I took that lens onto LinkedIn, and back then it was a lot easier because we weren't using it in the same way. We hadn't gone through that massive projection, and people were quite honestly just sitting behind a computer board looking for something to do. So it was just a place to have conversations back then. But yeah, so what ended up happening was this is when the right place sort of comes in. I'd been bouncing around. I wasn't really sure. I'd sort of fallen into the sales role and wasn't really sure what I was going to do. In my mind, I was always going to be a music producer or something like that, something that I did do briefly. But from a redundancy, due to COVID again. I bounced around for a couple of years and essentially fell into a depression, trying to figure out what was next. I tried a few different roles, didn't work, and I found myself in a backed into a corner, thinking, "What am I going to do?" And essentially, I went down to a park, wrote down all the life experiences that I thought were relevant, all the values that I had, all the strengths that I thought I had, and decided that I would try to build a business off the back of the knowledge that I had, essentially. And that's sort of where the trajectory changed, in all honesty, is just having that moment to myself and then leaning into it and going for it. I gave myself 12 months and my only goal was to move the needle. And that happened, and here we are.
No, excellent, Brad. Congratulations. I mean, that's an amazing turnaround. I mean, I've had a similar experience leaning into networking and helping people connect the dots. And you almost have to back yourself. You've had a certain life experience. You've got qualifications. You told me that you've created quite an interesting thing. It's called the Personal Compass Exercise. How did you create that, and how does it help people find their direction or even validate their sense of belonging?
So what I found is a general hesitancy to post online. When you look a little bit deeper at what that hesitancy is, it's a question of self-confidence. Do I have anything valuable to share? I created it to mimic the process that I went through at the beginning of my business journey that I already told you about, taking myself to the park and asking myself some really deep questions. And essentially what it is, I take you through that journey. It's a series of 20 very deep personal questions that take you through memories that go all the way back from your childhood to where you are now. And during the process, you get asked prompts, and I tell you why I'm asking you these questions, so that you can actually, you know, feel validated in these small experiences that you otherwise would ignore. And then at the end, you put the questionnaire that you've now completed from these 20 questions into an AI agent, which then spits back out at you all your values, everything, all your strengths, everything that is worthwhile to share of your personal journey, and really just give you the self-confidence to make that first step, which is just putting yourself out there and be confident. Because as soon as you are confident in yourself, the anxiety of what other people think about you goes away. And that's the real challenge of doing something public and putting on, is the perception that you're going to be judged. The reality is that no one cares, but that's not how it feels. And I think that, yeah, once you get over that hurdle, like anything's possible. Anything's possible. You need to start at the root. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You always got to start with the basics. Yeah, what you need first before you can share and contribute.
Absolutely, Brad. I like that example, and I like the methodology behind it, because I've often told people, you're either your own best friend or your own worst enemy. And you need to almost embrace who you are and what you are, and kind of find your purpose. But that takes a little bit of work, and it takes a little bit of putting yourself out there. I remember back when we started this podcast, and when I started my journey coaching networking and doing networking events, no one understood this, and it was like very foreign to them. But I just knew it was the right thing to do. And now, exactly like the people that were skeptical of you or laughed at you are now applauding you, are now looking up to you, because you've gone and done something. But in that early stage, it's going to suck. It's going to feel weird. It's going to feel even fake. You're going to be like, what am I doing? Can't I just be a normal person? Can't I just have a normal job? What am I busy with here? But I really applaud people and encourage them to go ahead and go on this almost like this journey of self-discovery. Especially if you're, I mean, I'm in my 40s now, but if you're in your late 30s, you've been around the block, you've had kids, you've had a career, you've maybe had multiple careers already. It's a good time to reflect. You don't want to close your eyes and just put your head down, and 20 years later, you're completely off tangent. You're in a job that you hate, in relationships that you don't want to be in. So it's always a good time to spend some time working on yourself. Ask yourself these difficult questions, write it down, journal about it, meditate on it. So I think it's a wonderful exercise to do.
I think you also need to ask yourself, like, are you happy? You know, like at the end of the day, a lot of people like yourself, like me, who do take the leap online is because something's pushed them to do it. And usually that's some sort of uneasiness or unhappiness with where they currently are, and the realization that you need to take things into your own hands if you're going to do something about it. What is a normal job these days? Well, if you're a knowledge worker, it's moving online. I don't know. And how many jobs will exist in the future without some sort of, I think a lot of jobs are going to lean. I think business is going to change a lot in the near future. And we're going to be expected to do a lot more things because the perception is that things have become easier. For example, salespeople getting online and putting themselves out there. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you, Brad. Brad, you're in an amazing environment there down under in Adelaide, Australia. And one of the things that you do is a weekly walking group with Mike Scott, and there's a bit of a community that's been formed there. Tell me about those meetups that you do on a regular basis, and maybe what it's taught you about leadership.
Well, for those who don't know Mike Scott, a South African that's moved over to Adelaide, Australia, and he's started up a similar walk to Will's Green's walk. Essentially, it's a group of like-minded people, entrepreneurs, aspiring, you know, business people. There's a whole range. But we walk up to the top of a mountain, and really we just have chats about, you know, sometimes it's about AI, sometimes it's about TV shows, sometimes it's about how a difficult moment or life stages that we're going through or business stages that we're going through. But I think the thing that brings everybody together is the fact that we're all high achievers, I'll say, in our own right, and it's nice to be able to get together with people who think on that level, because quite often entrepreneurialism, solopreneurship, whatever you want to call it, is quite isolating, and I think that's what I have got out of it, is a feeling of camaraderie with like-minded people that have either been there and done that, and you know, it's a place to share ideas. I really enjoy it for those reasons.
100%, Brad. I mean, that's exactly what Will's Green Walk is all about. The entrepreneurship journey is definitely lonely. It's lonely to be a founder, and you think the whole world is against you, and then you take a walk, you go climb a mountain with somebody else, and you realize they're in the same boat as you, and you can share some war stories, you can get some encouragement, you can make some good connections. And I mean, it's definitely one way to network up, but also to level up your conversations, is to change your environment. If you're just always in the same environment, sitting in the same coffee shops, you're never going to upgrade your conversations. And like, if we upgrade our conversations, we just see a different perspective on things. We can just change our perspective on how we run our business, why we are running our business, what are we actually on about? And those type of things can be pretty big milestones in your life, in your journey, in your career as an as an entrepreneur. And you told me that you were once misunderstood in previous roles that you've had. Do you believe that entrepreneurship helped you reclaim your value and your voice?
Yeah, I do. I was definitely misunderstood. I think entrepreneurship was probably the hardest way to learn that lesson. But in the absence of good leaders around me to enable me to reach my potential, it was a choice that I felt necessary. And I wouldn't look back now, because I think that, as you were talking about those conversations, growth happens and progress happens when you have the ability to take an idea or take two disparate ideas and run with it and see what happens. And I think that maybe that was a strength of mine that was overlooked in the past. And entrepreneurship has allowed me to test and fail, and test and succeed. Yeah. To put it in a nutshell.
Yeah, really, really great answer there, Brad. Thank you. Brad, we always come to the end of our podcast and we ask the same question to all of our guests. So Brad Ether in Adelaide, Australia, where is your right place in 2025?
I'm going to bring it full circle. I think that I have the journey that I've just taken you on is a little shy of 2 years. I think I found my right place, right where I am, right now. I started the story telling you that my only ambition was to move the needle. I moved the needle, and am feeling confident where I am, that things are moving in the right direction, and very happy about my life circumstances. Yeah, like I said, just had a kid as well, so it better be my right place. Yeah.
No, thanks a lot, Brad. It's been a fascinating discussion. I really enjoy the frameworks that you've talked about and the different philosophies. It's very much in alignment with a lot of my thinking in the networking space. If people want to connect with you, learn more about the work that you do with Tomorrow, what is the best place to do that?
You can follow me on LinkedIn. It's Brad-Ether. Or visit my website, tomorrowcommunications.com.
Excellent, Brad. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Brad Ether. It's been wonderful to talk to him today. I hope you'll connect with him. I hope you'll check out some of his content as well. He's also got a great podcast that you can dive into a bit more sales theory and sales philosophies that he's a big fan of. Thank you, Brad. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please remember to like and follow the Right Place podcast on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Also, please check us out on LinkedIn as well. Thank you very much, Brad. Wish you all the best, and congratulations again on the birth of your first child, and hope everything's going well. And we will see you next time at the Right Place. Cheers.